Welcome to the Three Worlds podcast, number 18. When I listened back to the last ones that I recorded, I found that there was a horrible sort of hum, which I first of all thought might have been the microphone, and then I actually realised that it was the vibration of the hard drive of my Apple Mac that was actually vibrating the desk that the microphone was actually sat upon. So I have moved my microphone, and hopefully there's a modicum of silence. I hope there is anyway. There should be. And I also noticed last time that this microphone is a little bit kind of overly sensitive in that it picks up cars going past in the lane outside. I'm a perfectionist. I've got a really good recording studio in another room. But, you know, I really like to do it sort of in a good way, so I object to cars going past. But if they do from time to time, please just accept it, because I can't be bothered to go and move into the recording studio. Good evening to you all. I'm going to have a ramble about Sacred Hoop magazine. It dawned on me that it would be a nice idea. In fact, I must confess it wasn't my idea, it was Jan's. That each quarter when we produce a new issue of the magazine, I should do a sort of short audio editorial, I guess is a good way of putting it, and talk about the magazine and describe the articles in it in an attempt to let everybody know about it so that maybe we could get some of you wonderful people subscribing who aren't already subscribers. I know you're out there. Okay, so I'm sitting in the Sacred Hoop office. Now, I bet that sort of conjures up this sort of probably a mixture of sort of lots of strange shamanic objects and high-tech equipment. I'll just describe the office. It's untidy. That's the first bit. It's untidy and it's not very big. It's probably no more than about 8 feet across and perhaps 10 feet in length. And it has one window which, if it was daylight outside, looks over the River Keech. The River Keech is a small river that runs from some hills a little way away out to the sea. Well, it doesn't actually go out to the sea. It joins another river, actually just on the outskirts of the village that I live in. The name of my village is Aber Keech, and Aber means the mouth of. So it's the mouth of the Keech, or the end of the Keech. And there, this little river joins a larger river called the Tyvee. And the Tyvee goes out to the sea at Cardigan, all on the west coast of Wales. Now, the Keech is a very magical place. It's a very magical river. For at least 1,000 years, it's been considered to be a portal to the spirit worlds, the fairy lands. And in the medieval Welsh Mabinogion, it's mentioned as a portal that one of the main characters goes through and goes and ends up in fairyland. And so there's sort of supposedly vortexes, if you like, or entrances to the other realms. A little bit further up. It's not a very long river, it's probably only about 10 or 12 miles in total length, and it's not terribly deep apart from when it's in flood, and I guess outside down in the bottom of the valley it's about 20 feet across, something like that. And there's a little ford which I have crossed over, but mostly we go over it on a bridge, and it's a little walk that we go sometimes in the afternoons down into the bottom of the valley and go and explore the Keech a little bit. And I guess, yeah, we're about 10 miles away from the sea, but saying that, Jan, not that long ago, met a great big seal actually in the Keech down in the bottom of the valley beneath our houses. And top end of the Keech not only has portals to fairyland, it also has, in the best traditions of the Arthurian legends, it has a group of sleeping knights and their king who are in a cave waiting to be woken up to defend the valley and the surrounding areas in the threat of invasion, and they've been there since about the 7th or the 8th century. They're a Dark Age king and his knights. So it's a kind of interesting place to be. Lots of folklore. And I'll tell you, the top end of the valley, that's sort of where all the portals and things, it really is fairyland up there. It's the most weird place in terms of you can get lost there very easily. But it's extremely lovely. Not too many roads up there, and they're very narrow and kind of winding. And there's lots of woods and forests up there. I don't know that area very well at all. Even though it's quite close to where I live. Anyway, I'm going on and on and on about the valley, which probably isn't really what you want to hear about. The rest of this office, well, there's a few Tibetan tankers on the walls, and there's bookcases full of books, and there's an Apple Mac computer and a dustbin and a small fire, because it's, you know, electric fire, because it's not very warm in here tonight, and a printer, and it's just a little office. It's just a little home office in my house. Sacred Hoop is a very small magazine. Basically, it's me. I do just about everything. Jan founded it with my help back in 1993. And we produced it quarterly for all of those years together. And sometimes Jan would take more of the lead and sometimes I would take more of the lead. And about a year ago, Jan decided that she was going to sort of step back from it and concentrate on her painting and things. And so for the last year, I have basically done it all. So if people phone up and subscribe and things and they want to talk to me, it'll be me that's picking up the phone, because there's nobody else that works here. We are tiny. I do all the design of the magazine with a little bit of help from Jan. She kind of looks over it and sort of says, "No, that's a load of crap. You should do something different with that page." And I do all the subscriptions, and I sell all the advertising, and I make the tea, and I'm a shamanic practitioner. Sacred Hoop is a magazine for shamanic practitioners. We don't have any backers. We don't have any sort of big printing company that's, publishing company that kind of owns us, like lots and lots of magazines do. They're all sort of part of stables that belong to big companies. We're not. We're absolutely independent. And this is what I do. And we are quarterly, and we are full colour, and we have subscribers all over the world. And we have a paper edition to the magazine, and we have an electronic edition to the magazine. And I have in my hand issue 61. I can barely believe it, you know, when we kind of get these issues back each time. You know, I remember the very first issue, and I thought, well, maybe it'll last a couple. And the first issue was really small, and it was all black and white. And here I am with issue 61. In my hand, which is kind of, it's still amazing to me. I hope that we're going to get at least to 100. And sometimes I work out how old I'll be when I can actually get to issue 100. And I think I'll still be able to operate a computer, I hope. So issue 61 of Sacred Hoop magazine. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the contents of this magazine. We had a whole load of stuff come in. It was really interesting. What often happens with the magazine is that people contact us for articles. They sort of offer us things. And we often don't specifically try and get a theme together. But it's like from one direction and then from another direction and then from another direction, articles that are related will come. So we've got themes in this one, and I guess the major theme really is ancestors. We've got an article by Caitlin Matthews about working with the ancestral legacy that haunts families and causes sort of disruption within families. So it's sort of a mixture of shamanism and family therapy. And then we have another article about looking at the strength of the ancestors and the gifts that they bring to us and that whole connectedness. And that's from a Dutch author called Dan van Kampenholt. And that actually came through Caitlin too, because she's bringing Dan over to do some work in Stroud in England, and she offered us the article. So we had two coming in from her in that respect, one from her and one from Dan, but she was the sort of the contact person. And then we had a really nice article by a guy called Curag, or Churag. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce his name. Churag, if you're listening to this, I do apologize. I think it's Churag, Churaig. Churag MacNeill, who I met recently down at the Shamanism Conference that was held in England a couple of weeks ago. And he's an Australian Scot, and he came across to Britain a few years ago. And this article in here is him looking for his family roots on the islands off the west coast of Scotland, where his original clan came from, and how he does clan healing there with the spirits of his ancestors. It's interesting stuff. And I had a very interesting evening with him at the conference in Gaunt's house in back in England a couple of weeks ago. We sort of sat over a cup of coffee and sort of chewed the fat, as it were. And it was very pleasant. Nice guy. And then, kind of bridging, if you like, ancestors with other elements within the magazine, we have an article about sword making. Now, we've never had anything about sword making in Sacred Hoop, but this is an article by a guy called Andrew Jordan. And Andrew is a master swordsmith, bladesmith, he calls himself. He trained initially in the Japanese sword traditions. He went to be a Japanese sword apprentice, and the article relates the real tough nature of that apprenticeship. And then he came back to Britain, and he's been researching what are called pattern welded blades, which the Dark Age and earlier peoples of Northern Europe created. Now, pattern welding is a blade that's made up of lots of different little bits of metal that are all heated together and twisted and hammered and twisted and hammered and twisted and hammered. And then when the final blade is made, it's etched in acid. And all of the patterns created by the different strips of metals that are sort of interwoven stand out. And it looks a little bit like Celtic knotwork. And Andrew's been doing some fascinating research looking at the Dark Age traditions of the Weird Sisters. Now, the Weird Sisters are the three fates. They are Dark Age European traditions of three sisters who live at the base of the World Tree. And in the very roots of the World Tree, there is a cave. And in the cave, the Weird Sisters keep bolts of cloth, rolls of cloth for every human being alive, and woven into these cloths are patterns, and every person has got an individual pattern in the cloth. And Andrew's been looking at the old sagas from Iceland and various other places like that, and working out about the smith dwarfs who would liaise with the Weird Sisters to get the patterns from the cloth so that they could come back and make an individual blade for someone that would be a sacred weapon for them, a sacred sword. It's a very interesting article, it really is. And so that sort of bridges the bit between the ancestors and more of a sort of object feel within the other rest of the articles in the magazine. We've got a lovely article by a guy called Fred Hagander, who worked for a while with a Buryat shaman. Now, Buryat shamans come from a small area of southern Russia, sort of well, it's sort of southwestern, no, southeastern Russia, sorry. It's southern Siberia, basically. It's just by Tuva and the top of Mongolia, not far from Lake Baikal. I can't talk. Lake Baikal. And it's the sort of classic homeland of what we really think of as Siberian shamans. And Fred went around Britain with this shaman when he came over here, and it's a story a little bit about his sort of experiences of the shaman blessing an ancient yew tree in a forest in England, and also looking at the way that the shamans have a tradition of the different woods that they use for the different ritual objects that they create and use. And then kind of in that same tradition, we have an article by a guy called Whitney Rees, and it's helped by somebody called Stuart Bogg, who are writing about an ongon. Now, an ongon is a spirit house in Mongolian traditions, and Whitney had a spirit house, a very old one, I think it was 15th or 16th century, made of copper in the shape of a person. Now, these were empowered, and still are, because they're still created in Siberian shamanism. They're like fetishes. If you're familiar with the Zuni animal fetishes that contain the spirit of an animal, ongons are a little bit like that. They're often in the shape of a person. Not always, but often. And made of different materials. And they are empowered by the shamans so that the spirit can actually live in it. And they use for a whole variety of different things in Mongolian and southern Siberian shamanism in particular. And this is a lovely article where he describes this particular ongon and looks at the whole tradition of ongon. And then we kind of carry on a little bit from that, looking at the similarities between Tantra and shamanism, because this ongon from Mongolia is actually a tantric ongon. It combines elements of shamanism and the tantric Buddhism that came to Mongolia from Tibet. So it's a sort of hybrid piece, which is one of the things that makes it somewhat unusual and special as an ongon. So we have an article from a guy called John Hawkin, who is looking at the similarities between Tantra and shamanism. And if you were listening to my last podcast, or maybe it was the one before, the ones on the medicine wheel, I was talking about the V-stick in the centre of the medicine wheel. It must have been actually in the last one, I think, because we did the 20 count in that. And the V-stick is a very tantric sort of thing, where you have the opposites of up and down and black and white and male and female, which is very much about Tantra too. Tantra is about working with the opposites. When I learnt medicine wheel, I really, most of my sort of adult spiritual life, if you like, I always wanted to actually work with Tibetan teachers. And I never really found any. And the ones that I did find, they kind of just wanted to do sitting meditation. And I kind of was screaming inside saying, "This isn't Buddhism!" And it's like I knew that there was something else. And I've since sort of worked out that it's actually a lot more to do with Mongolian shamanism. But I was constantly offered by the universe to work with Native American teachers. So I very gratefully took up that offer and worked with lots and lots of different medicine wheel teachers and Native American teachers. And then eventually I did actually get to work with some Tibetan traditions and receive some Tibetan tantric teachings, and it was all medicine wheel, or rather all the medicine wheel that I learnt was Tantra. It's the same damn stuff, would you believe it? You know, that's one of the things that I absolutely adore about working in Sacred Hoop and working in shamanism in general, is that I get to look at all these different cultures and they're all the bloody same, and that is fantastic. They dress up in different clothes, if you like, but the bones of them, they're all the same. So all these Native American people that I worked with that had taught me different bits and pieces of medicine wheel, and I go and work with this Rinpoche, and he says exactly the same stuff, and he calls it Tantra. And that just blows my socks off. I absolutely love that. So I often joke with people and say, well, actually, I learnt Tantra from Native Americans, because it really is the same damn stuff. I've been going through a sort of craft work phase over the last few months of looking really deeply at the tradition of drum making in Siberia, which is very different in many ways to the Native American drums. that probably most of you are familiar with. Native American style drums, you know, the frame drums that people have, tend to have rawhide laces that go all over the back, and then they're often formed into a sort of cross shape that you hold. Siberian shaman's drums, which really I think you could probably consider to be the original shaman's drums, because that's sort of, you know, they're the main people that use drums really in that way for shamanism and shamanic journeys and all of that sort of stuff, really comes primarily from Siberia. But these shaman's drums from Siberia, they're laced up in a different way. They don't have rawhide lacings going across the back. The skins are actually stitched to the wooden frames, and you make holes in the wooden frames and you put a stitch, like a running stitch, all the way around the edge of the drum. And it takes forever, forever to make a drum that way. And I've been working with it, sort of perfecting the technique. I mean, no one sort of taught me how to do that. This is by looking at photographs and bits and pieces, you know, just trying to work it out, really. And I've pretty much learnt quite a comfortably working technique now of stitching on skins like that. But it takes an enormously long time to do, far longer than the Native American rawhide style drums. Anyway, I've been researching drums, I suppose, really for a long time, because I've been making drums for, oh, the best part of 25 years, certainly over 20. I obviously learned quite a lot of sort of bits and pieces about Siberian drums in all of that time. And as I say, for the last month or so, I've actively been really, really, really concentrating on it. So I thought it would be really nice to do an article on that. So there's an article in this issue from me, 4 pages with lots and lots of photographs of different Siberian and Mongolian shaman's drums, and looking at the whole way that they're made and the whole way that they're used and the way they're empowered and everything else. And then beyond that, there is an article from an artist called Polly Fox Strangways, who is looking at the tradition of painted beehives. And Polly is a painter, so that's sort of continuing the crafts and arts sort of section on from me. And she paints beehives, and she's been looking at the sort of the whole tradition of painting sort of, for want of a better way of putting it, esoteric knowledge into the beehives, and looking at that whole sort of beehive tradition. So that's the sort of the running order, or rough running order, of issue 61 of Sacred Hoop magazine. So I'm going to do a bit of a sales plug here. Sacred Hoop is surviving. We've survived 61 issues. But survival is not always easy for us. It would be really nice to have more subscriptions, because subscriptions are the lifeblood to any magazine. And the magazine is available worldwide by post, or it's available electronically. And the electronic there's a special link which I have put on for people who listen to this podcast, where you can get it for £7.50 instead of £10. Now, for those of you who have funny monopoly money called the US dollars, £7.50, pounds, proper pounds, pounds sterling, decent proper currency there. In Monopoly money, in US dollars, it's about $1.80 to the pound at the moment. So if you times £7.50, or 7.5 times 1.8, that's approximately how many dollars it costs for a year's subscription. So a proper price would be £10, but you can have it for £7.50. And I'm going to give you the link to that in a moment or two. It's a special hidden page on the Sacred Hoop website, so you can go to it and you can get a cheap one there, and tell your friends. We're not proud. Share it about. What I don't want you to do is share the PDF that you get. That I wouldn't like. So if you get a PDF, great, but keep it to yourselves. Don't pass it on to people. Get them to subscribe. And the same with you wonderful people that have the paper magazine. Don't share it and lend it to people so they can read it. Get them to buy their own. Because you know, we put the magazine together, I put the magazine together as a trust exercise, really, each time. And it really is. Sometimes we never know quite where the money's going to come from. Like I said, we don't have big, you know, backers, big company that kind of backs us. So it would be really nice to have more subscriptions, because then we can make a better magazine and we can reach more people with this stuff. We can actually do better things, you know, within the shamanic community in that way. So I would really appreciate more subscriptions. Thank you. Okay, so I'll give you the link in a few minutes so that you can get the cheap one. Paper copies, we can't really offer a subscription discount to you, I'm afraid, because really we don't make that much money on subscriptions, and there's postal costs and everything, so that makes it a bit difficult. But those of you who go for a paper subscription, if you're a new subscriber, you get 2 free back issues, and we will send you those, so that your first little package from us will be the current issue and 2 free back issues. And you can choose the ones that you want, if you wish to, from the website, or we just tend to grab 2 off the shelf if nobody sort of specifies the ones that they want. And the website, the Sacred Hoop website, is www.sacredhoop.org. And the cost of a paper subscription is, and I'm quickly looking through the magazine here because I can't actually completely remember it. I know the UK is £14. Okay, UK is £14 for 1 year, and in Europe, wherever that is, and believe it or not, our postal rates include Mongolia and Russia within Europe. So Europe is a sort of a big place. It's £18. And for the USA and the rest of the world, which is places like South Africa and China and Japan and, you know, places like that, Australia, I think I said that, whatever, that's £21. That's a bargain. That gives you 4 magazines sent directly through your letterbox. And that's just for 1 year. There are 2-year and 3-year subscriptions available, and they work out a little bit cheaper. All of the details for these are on the Sacred Hoop website, of course. We used to be absolutely Native American based. The first 6 issues were absolutely Native American based. And that was because there really wasn't anything else around back then. I mean, we started the magazine because at that time, back in the early 1990s, there were hardly really any books even on shamanism. There seemed to be nothing about. There was one other American magazine called Shaman's Drum, and but in Britain there was really nothing. And there was a sort of slightly sort of flourishing, you know, new shamanic scene here, and people were starting to bring teachers across from other countries to work here and things like that. And we had a conference. All of the shamanic teachers had a small conference in a Welsh valley called Pennant. And it was organised by 2 British teachers of Medicine Wheel, Annie Spencer and Anna Garlin. And they organised this under canvas conference in this Welsh valley, and they didn't know how many people would turn up, but actually it was about 70 people, and we stayed for sort of 2 or 3 days, and everybody got to meet people, you know, meet the other teachers, because they hadn't met before. And that was pretty amazing. That was back in about 1992, I guess. And Jan and I were there because we'd been teaching Medicine Wheel for a few years before that, I suppose. The whole thing about networking kind of happened. And there was a woman called Bea Quick who was based in London, and she had a photocopied little sort of couple of sides of paper of little kind of alternative-y shamanic sort of events that would happen around London and sort of surrounding area. And it was called People on the Path. And B had been running this for some years. And after the conference had finished and we were back home, Jan and I and a friend of ours called Duncan Wordley, who was also a Medicine Wheel teacher, we'd got together to sort of think about what had happened at the conference and how we could sort of network and, you know, kind of, you know, what we could do, really. And during the afternoon that we were all chatting, the three of us, B phoned us up and said to Jan, who picks up the phone, "Jan, I've had enough of doing this People on the Path events diary thing. I'm going to put it down or pass it on to somebody. Do you know anybody that might want to pick it up?" And Jan kind of relayed this to me, and we looked at each other, and it was just a total gift from spirit because of the timing. And so Jan said, "Yeah, okay, obviously, you know, we'll do something with it." So we had her mailing list of about 300 people. And from those 300 people, we sent them all letters and we said, "Look, we're going to get a magazine together. Would you like to subscribe to it?" And most of those 300 people actually paid their first year's subscription. And that gave us enough money to print the first issue of the magazine. Now, we didn't have a computer. I mean, can you imagine back in those dark age days of 1993, computers were pretty amazing and very expensive things. But we had, Jan and I, worked for a little UK magazine, a little alternative spirituality magazine called Link Up, run by a woman called Shauna Crockett Burrows. And Link Up had, I think at that point, just folded. And Shauna had an Apple Mac computer which she could lend us for 1 week. We didn't have a printer, nothing to print out the pages onto at all, but we had a tiny little black and white Apple Mac computer. It had a 9-inch black and white screen. If I remember right, it had a hard drive of 40 megabytes and 2 megabytes of RAM. And we created this, well, Jan's son, actually, is by the name of Jeremy Sargent. He knew about computers. We didn't even know how to turn a computer on, honestly, literally. And Jeremy forbid us going anywhere near it. And Jeremy typeset this whole first issue of the magazine, and we did all the proofreading on screen. We had 1 week to get it together. And then Jeremy took the discs to a place that could print them out on a laser printer. And we then gave paper copies of all of the pages to a printer who then used photographs. He photographed them with a special printer's camera. And then he created plates and he printed the first issue of the magazine for us. And then we started to sort of obviously sell bits of advertising, and that got us more money in. And we could then print the second issue. And for the second issue, we actually bought a second-hand printer from, a second-hand computer from a local little printing company. But again, we didn't have a printer, a laser printer or anything to print it out from. And this little printer, you know, the guy, it was a little printer in the village, the town that we lived in, called Mint Print. And the guy who ran Mint Print, a guy called Mike, gave us his keys to his office. He didn't know us from Adam, and he wasn't at all interested in shamanism, not at all. He was a typical businessman. But he lent us, we bought the computer off him secondhand, and he lent us the keys to his office so that we could go down to his office, let ourselves in late at night, go through all the alarm systems that he had there, and use his printer to print out things that we had carried down to his printer's works on a floppy disk. And so that's how the second one was actually created. And again, we had hard copy pages of everything that we created. And we then gave those to the printer who printed our magazine, who wasn't Mint Print, it was another printer. And he then photographed it again and created the plates and printed the issues. And that's how it worked. And we have gradually grown in this hand-to-mouth way until we are now, like I said, I sit here now with a full colour issue in my hands, issue 61. And that's been our story. It's been the story of absolute trust in spirit to enable the magazine to happen. And sometimes we've been absolutely hard up against it and almost at the point of folding. And people who didn't know that have given us gifts of money. And we have survived that way. It has been totally spirit-led. And that's why, for me, it's far more than a magazine. It's I would hesitate to say mission, but it smacks of that sometimes. It really does. We have felt so many times that Spirit wants this magazine to go out. And that's why I'm sort of sitting here tonight going on about it too, because I think what it does is important. And, you know, we sort of really do put our essence into it. Well, me mostly at the moment, as I say, because Jan isn't doing it very much. And that's why I would encourage you to subscribe to it if you would like to. So I've probably gone on and on enough now. Because I'm actually sitting with the microphone on a bookshelf, I can't see my computer screen, so I have no idea how long I've been talking. But I'm going to get the link for the special price PDF edition. And we have a secure website shopping cart system. So if you put in credit cards, it's absolutely encrypted and secure and watertight and safe. Then I pack up the magazines and I get in my car and I drive through some Welsh lanes for about 5 miles to the nearest post office, which is a little corner shop in a little place called Boncath. And the guy in there who runs the little village shop and does the post office, he sticks the stamps and everything on the letters that go out. And from there we send the issues out all around the world. It's a real cottage industry, literally. I mean, this place is a little cottage in this tiny little Welsh valley, in this tiny little Welsh house. There's probably only about 150 people living in this village, something like that. It's pretty small. And that's what I do. That's my day, really. Bits of magazine, and then I, you know, do craft work if people sort of order me to commissions from me. Make drums for people, and I buy and sell ritual objects and sort of sell those too, and maintain all the websites and things. And it's pretty full on sometimes, especially when we get close to publication. When we get close to publication, my working life is, for the last month really, is full time, completely full time. And when I say full time, I'm talking from 10 in the morning to midnight, 7 days a week. That's how much work it takes to put the magazine together. So I have, because we're quarterly, there is a month that's quiet, which is what I'm now in now. I'm just doing the last dregs of the posting out to people. I've done all the subscriptions. I've got the shops to do now. And they go out in the next sort of few days. And then it's quiet for a few weeks. And then it starts to get a little bit busy for another month. And then the last month is absolute bedlam, mayhem, craziness. And then I collapse again at the end, like I am now at this point, and we have a quiet month. I'm now going to get the link for you for the secret page on the website where you can get a PDF electronic subscription for £7.50 times 1.8 if you want it in dollars. And then I will play some music and I will turn this microphone off, and the next podcast will be Podcast 19. We're almost in the 20s. This is good. Thank you for listening. I hope some of my ramble tonight has been of interest to you. And please consider subscribing to the magazine. You really will enjoy it. It's considered to be a very attractive, well-designed magazine. And I don't mean in any way to boast with that, but we absolutely don't cut corners with it. I'm a perfectionist. And I aim for the magazine to look as good as it possibly can. Lots and lots of colour photographs and lots of really, really interesting and relevant information. And that special offer page on the Sacred Hoop website, which enables you to have e-subscriptions at £7.50 instead of £10, is very simple. It is www.sacredhoop.org/offer.html. offer is in lowercase and it's OFFER. So sacredhoop.org/offer.html. Okay, thank you. And I hope you enjoy the music. I've no idea what I'm going to put on, but I hope it's good. All right, bye-bye. To the freaks and the normals, shall I raise a drink and pull up a chair and tell you what I think? But there again, of course, I might tell a lie, but on that you'll have to judge. I can't swear to you that I'll be strong. I can't swear to you I'll do no wrong. I might mess things up, you'll have to wait and see. Perhaps you'll split your sides with glee. I remember when I was just a child, I never had the courage to run free and wild. But I dreamt I might one day or so if I got half a chance to fly. Well, life gives you wings and it clips them too. From the looks of it, it did the same to you. Well, here's a hand, just skin to skin. Let's pull each other through. We're not important, but we matter a lot. We have it all, and yet not a jot. Take all your time and no time at all, and I'll walk by the side of you. We feet in the dirt, but a head in the sky. We're quick to laugh, but still prone to cry. Take all your time and no time at all, and I will walk by the side of you. That I'm the best friend that you've ever had. That's a real pledge to you. I might not do all that you expect of me. Sometimes I might need to feel a little free. But when you need a hand, just skin to skin, I'll be there to pull you through. We're not important, but we matter a lot. We have it all, and yet not a jot. Take all your time and no time at all, and I will walk by the side of you. We feet in the dirt, but a head in the sky. We're quick to laugh, but still prone to cry. Take all your time and no time at all, and I will walk by the side of you. We have it all, and yet not a jot. Take all your time and no time at all, and I'll walk by the side of you. We feet in the dirt, but a head in the sky. We're quick to laugh, but still prone to cry. Take all your time and no time at all, and I will walk by the side of you.